edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. So glad that you're joining us. Thanks so much for your belief and your trust in us as you join us tonight. You know, you could be doing 100 different things. As long as you do them with us, take us with you, whether it's in your car, your boat coming up. Well, actually, hey, if you live in the South, certainly it could very well be right now, whether you're early or late in Europe, listening in Europe. I want to welcome each and every one of you to our broadcast. We've got a great guest. This gentleman, I've been following, every time I say this, it's almost like I'm stalking someone. I've been following Steve SRS Rocco Report, and I'm going to work on my letters tomorrow. I was working on my numbers today. See, my pronunciation, I'm sorry. Joe's got me messed up here. Steve St. Angelo from SRS Rocco Report. Have you seen SRS Rocco Report? I'm sure you have. It's often cited. Well, our guest right now is the founder of SRS Rocco Report.com, independent researcher, Steve St. Angelo. He started to invest in precious minerals back in 2002. Later in 2008, he began researching areas of the gold and silver market that, interestingly, the majority of the precious metal analyst community had left unexplored. And those areas? What do you think? Energy, oil, commodities, such as, well, energy. But the energy return on invested stand to impact the mining industry, precious metals, paper assets, and the overall economy. He's got a wonderful track record, wonderful. He's very well respected in the economic circles. And you can find a lot of his writings, for example, on such sites as Market Oracle, Financial Sense, Gold, Silver.com, Silver Doctors, a lot of stuff on Silver Doctors. Peak Prosperity, Silver Strategies, Dollar Collapse. I can go on, Zero Hedge, I can go on and on, but there you have it. We're so pleased to welcome as our guest right now, Steve St. Angelo from SRS Rocco Report. Steve, thanks for coming on with us.
No, I appreciate it. There's so many things going on in the market, and as you all know, it's getting crazier and crazier. You know, this is the craziest year we've seen politics with the new President Trump trying to make some changes up there and dealing with what they call the swamp. So I think it's going to be a very interesting year this year. So there's plenty to talk about.
You know, right before the show, earlier, we were talking about the economy. We were talking about the political landscape, but the economy, the debt ceiling, the precious metals, the fact that we're seeing gold and silver prices artificially repressed. We're seeing all sorts of weird things take place, things that we've never seen before. And we can't think of a better person to help us out with all of this than you. So why don't you tell us, where do we start even talking about the economy in this new era of President Trump and what we've been through and where we're going? In fact, earlier during our pre-show meeting, I said, you know, I'm not even sure I know what question to ask you first because there's so much out there. So what should we be? What kind of questions should we be asking, first of all?
Well, you see, that's a great question because the issue is, I'm glad Trump is a president in the presidency right now, but the problem is he's got so many issues to deal with. But the most important issue, the underlying issue, is the energy. And so, yes, there's a lot to talk about. And you see, our economy isn't run by finance. Most people think it's run by finance. It is in a way, but it's actually run by energy, and it's steered by finance. And right now, they're steering us over the cliff. So to really understand what's going on with the manipulation of the markets, with the Federal Reserve and U.S. Treasury printing money, as well as other countries, the European Union, Japan, China, now they're buying stocks, they've been buying bonds, all this stuff that's going on. The issue is the underlying cause is the energy. And you see, this isn't a new principle. This isn't something we're just stumbling across. The Roman Empire had the same problem. They grew rapidly. And the reason why they grew is they had a really interesting, their model was this. We use forces, military, and we take over other areas, other countries, other regions, and we take their wealth and their resources, and then we convert it into more resources to grow the empire. Well, that worked for hundreds of years, but they got to a point where they peaked, and their energy return on investment of their Roman Empire, it peaked. Now, they could have went into northern, let's say, the Germanic area, but they had the resources to do that. But what happened was there wasn't much there in wealth. Or they could have went after Persia. There was a lot of wealth in Persia, but they didn't have the resources really to attack the Persians. So the Roman Empire was stuck. And so what they did is they started putting up all these forts, all these lines of defenses, and it costs a lot of energy. Not only money, because energy is money, and money is energy. So they collapsed because their energy return on investment started to decline. And it just took a matter of time. And so what did they do to offset their falling energy return on investment? And I'll discuss that in a second. They debased their currency. And everyone knows how the Roman denarius, which is their silver currency, was debased. Now, today, we're doing the same thing. The U.S. and global oil industry's energy return on investment, and I'll make it simple for your listeners. In 1930, the U.S. oil industry was producing 100 barrels of oil for the energy cost of one. By 1970, it fell to 30 to 1. Now, we're producing a lot of shale in the back in Eagle Ford, but guess what? We're only producing 5 profitable barrels now for every barrel of energy that we're putting into the system. We see this is bad news. And this falling energy return on investment is gutting the entire system. Not only is it gutting the energy system, the U.S. and global oil industry, it's gutting the whole market and financial system. And it was slow at first, but now it's really picking up speed. So unfortunately, Trump has got a lot of problems because, you see, his notion of making America great again, by doing all these ideas of infrastructure building, bringing manufacturing back to the United States, they're all great ideas. But the problem is, we don't have the profitable energy to do it. And here is the clincher. This is the most important thing for your listeners to understand. A modern society, such as the United States, needs an energy return on investment of its oil. Let's just say the profitable barrels. We need at least 20 profitable barrels to run everything. It takes 10 profitable barrels just to run the interstate highway and our agricultural processing and distribution system, just to get food on our dinner plate. It takes 10 to 1. It takes 10 barrels of that oil. When you include entertainment, you include all the education, you include the retail stores and markets, we need 20 to 1. Healthcare, we need 20 to 1. Well, at 5 to 1 shale, which is half of our oil production, it's not paying the bills. We're not paying the bills anymore. So what do? We add a lot of debt to the system. So this is basically, in a nutshell, the issue, what we're facing. And unfortunately, I'll conclude with this. Most analysts do not look at the energy. They look at energy as a sector. They look at the housing sector, the housing market, the tech stocks, the agricultural sector, the automobile industry. All those industries are nothing without the energy. Energy is the underlying factor of our economy. And so this is why we're in serious trouble.
You know, not too many people talk about this. Not too many analysts, financial analysts talk about this. And I'm so glad you are. And it's interesting to hear you explain this. You've done it exquisitely, I believe, in terms of making it understandable. Now let me kind of back up, if I can, and ask this. In the, well, just a quarter century ago, and longer, but I mean, in modern times, we were joined at the hip with Saudi Arabia, petrodollar. And it's my understanding, and correct me, because this is the way I understand it. Our money system, the fact that we are the world's reserve currency is based on the fact that we're joined at the hip, or we're able to assure or ensure the safe and free, unmolested flow of oil throughout the world through our naval assets. But the second part of that is that the Saudi oil itself, the lift costs are cheaper, or have been historically less expensive coming from Saudi Arabia. It's my understanding we're losing that, and as such, this is going to have an adverse impact on our entire economy. Number one, did I make sense? And number two, is that even relevant?
No, that's a great point you brought up. That's a great point. You see, the $10 trillion in our, let's say, account deficit, we have over $10 trillion since the 70s. Since Nixon dropped the gold dollar peg in 71, the U.S. account deficit, that's actually when our account deficit started, our trade deficits. Right after 1972, they started increasing. Well, it's $10.4 trillion when you add them all up. Half of that's oil. Half of that is the oil imports. And now Saudi Arabia, on this petrodollar standard, allowed, you see, if we didn't go off the gold standard, the U.S. empire couldn't have continued because of this $10 trillion account deficit. So all these countries now have we owe them $10 trillion plus. That's not including our own public debt in the United States, domestic debt. But the interesting thing is, you're right, Saudi Arabia is in real trouble, because Saudi Arabia's oil company, Aramco, is a national oil company, and I'll tell you how much trouble they're in. When the price of oil was over $100, and it was over $100 from 2011 to 2013, actually to 2014, and this is what's interesting, it fell below $100 in 2014. I believe August was the year. Since August 2014, Saudi Arabia has liquidated 34% of its foreign exchange reserves. Most of them are U.S. treasuries. They're not making the money now. They were making the money back in the 80s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. But now, you see, the cost to produce oil, even though Saudi Arabia is lower lifting costs, they're doing a lot to pump that oil out. They're spending a lot of money to pump that oil. And then they use their profits for the national government. And so in just 2.5 years, they've liquidated 34% of their reserves. Actually, last month, it was in January, they liquidated another $12 trillion. So this is bad news. And then let me give you another example. I just wrote an article about Pemex. That's the Mexican state national oil company. Technically, they're bankrupt. They have like $172 billion in liabilities, and they have $107 billion in assets. Their production has fallen 35% since 2005, and their debt is skyrocketing. I think their debt, long-term debt now, has gone up from $37 billion in 2008 to like $87 billion this year. So they're in big trouble. And what did they make an announcement last year? They're going to lay off 50,000 employees. So when we start looking around, we can't blame Pemex. Actually, more of their money is going to their people. They're using more people than, let's say, other public oil companies. But Royal Dutch Shell, their long-term debt is skyrocketed. It's $38 billion in 2014. Now it's $86 billion. And this is Royal Dutch Shell. It's one of the world's largest oil companies. So what we're seeing a massive increase in debt in not only U.S. oil companies and gas companies, we're seeing a massive increase in debt on all the public oil companies' balance sheets. And so this is the trouble. People don't see what's happening. And this debt has to be serviced. So I think we're going to see serious trouble going forward, and that's, and this whole thing is based on this falling energy return on investment. It's just becoming more and more costly, and it's not profitable to produce this oil. It's just going, a lot of it is going to stay in the ground, and a lot of these companies are dumping their reserves. I mean, ExxonMobil just rid off 3.3 billion barrels of its tar sands. Tar sands is not commercially viable at $50, $60. So this is the issue we're in, and I think we're going to see a much different oil industry in 5 years. We could see a huge disintegration of the oil industry, and that's bad because oil is the lifeblood of our economy. And where I live, the trucks that ship the coal, it's a constant line of trucks. Two trailers, dump trailers, and they run coal up and down the interstate all day long, 24 hours a day.
Oil, you mean?
Yeah, they're using diesel to transport the coal. Now, they're using diesel fuel in the trucks to transport the coal. So even though we're using coal to generate electricity for the power to light, to power our homes and businesses, a lot of it is being transported by truck. So we need the oil to move the coal. So this is the issue that we're facing.
Man, okay. And this is complex. And folks, our guest is Steve St. Angelo, srsroccoreport.com. And you can read, actually, what Steve is talking about. He's got a great article, Pemex, Mexico's state oil company on the verge of bankruptcy and collapse. In part, you can read on his website. Fantastic analysis. So, okay, now what? Because this can't be fixed, right?
Any help in that area with these new pipeline operations that are being that Obama first shut down? Now Trump's opening up the Dakota pipeline. Will this bring any extra energy independence to this country?
You know, that's a good question. I look at this pipeline as the same thing as the Chinese cities that they built up an infrastructure to nowhere. All these huge metropolises, and we've seen them in videos. In China, they built all these big cities, and there's no one living in them. Well, this, you see, what people need to realize, shale oil production, and that's what this pipeline is for. Shale oil production has a very high decline rate. And I actually calculated it. Last year, the top shale oil companies, they lost 3.1 million barrels of oil. Lost. That's how much their decline was last year. They added 2.2 million, and that's when the price was falling. So we lost 900,000 barrels. That's how the decline happened. The issue is it's so expensive. The only way to increase production is they have to keep drilling faster and faster. The unfortunate thing is, since 2008, when shale really took off in the United States, they went into the good key core areas. You always go for the best first, and that's what they did. So they got the more profitable, better commercial wells. They drilled those first. Well, they have peaked, and even though that U.S. oil production has gone up from its bottom about 6 months ago, the Bakken and Eagle Ford, they haven't increased much at all. They're still at their bottom. So this is the issue. By the time this pipeline is running, it'll function for a while, but we just don't have the back end. It's probably peaked. It will not ever return back to its peak, which was like about 1.2 million barrels a day. It's down 30-something percent. So same thing with the Eagle Ford in Texas. And so my issue is I see this idea of moving this oil, but I think within the next 5 to 10 years, U.S. oil production will be 50 to 75% less than what it is today.
And the results from that, of course, are going to be devastating economically. And
I drive up and down the road quite a bit. And there is this, the movie called The Sixth Sense. And the kid in the movie, he says, oh, I see a lot of dead people. Well, I don't see a lot of dead people, but what I do see is I see massive amount of colleges being shut down. I see, and it's all based on the energy. I see commercial buildings which dot the inner cities and also the suburbs now. I just see them vacant because even though you might be able to power them with electricity, you need cars moving around to give them activity to fill them up. And we really, and you asked me this question, what can we do? What can we do to offset this? And the Hirsch Report, done in 2005 for the U.S. government, said if you start doing transitioning away from oil, natural gas, 20 years before we peak, we can have a good transition. There'll be problems, but we could do it. If you wait 10 years, it's going to be serious trouble. And if you don't wait at all, and we haven't done anything really. We've done a little solar and electric vehicles, but it's actually a fraction. Then it's game over, and that's what we're facing. So all the trouble we see in the markets, all the stuff is based upon the energy. All the debt, all the derivatives, it's trying to offset this declining energy. And we're pushing the day of reckoning back. But when it comes, guys, it's going to fall off a cliff. I can't give the date or year, but each year we pass, we get closer and closer to it.
So, mm-hmm. Would this translate to a them giving out the energy to, you know, mass transportation, transporting of food, or would it just be priced so high as to be out of range for most Americans when we get to that point?
Well, you see, this is the interesting thing. And first we have the peak oil. Some people don't believe in it. They believe in abiotic oil. However, the falling energy return on investment proves that the abiotic oil theory doesn't really hold. There might be some going on, but it just doesn't hold because the math shows us the oil, the value of the oil is falling. And it's also falling in Russia, where they say that the abiotic oil theory, they're doing a lot over there. I've looked at some of their stats from Gazprom and some of the big Russian oil companies. They're drilling horizontal wells just like we are in the U.S., the shale. That's where they're getting a lot of their production. So I think the issue is we do not have we don't have a plan B, and I think it's going to be
we're going to be tapped out, right? I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I sense you're telling us that we're going to be tapped out, that there won't be anything to be gotten.
No, and I guess this is the issue. I just talked about peak oil and the falling energy return on investment. There's another study called thermodynamics. And you see, this is what it has actually changed my thinking. We have based our price on goods, services, commodities, energy, on supply and demand. That's false. While supply and demand do are factors in volatility in the price movement throughout the year or a few years, the overriding price of a good, commodity, or energy is its cost of production. And if we plot this, we can figure out that the price of oil over the past 30, 40 years has been based upon its cost of production. Well, the issue is the value of the oil now is declining. The system is using so much of it to drill it, to explore it, to transport it in tankers and pipelines, to refine it, at the roads, to maintain it, to move all these vehicles. It takes a fleet of trucks just to do one shale well or gas well or oil well. Fleets of trucks. So we need all this stuff just to get the oil to the market. And each year, there's less and less getting to the market, which is why the price is falling. And this is the most hardest thing that people get their mind around. The price of oil will continue to fall. It's deflationary. It sounds so crazy because the value of it is falling. And you have to think about it this way. A brand new car is worth 25 or 30 grand. 15-year-old car goes for like 5 or 6 grand. Well, the reason why that old car only goes for $5,000 or $6,000. Is the embedded energy in the motor, radiator, all the parts, electronics, are all wearing out? So, and in time, it's only worth scrap. Well, it's the same thing with a barrel of oil. When we first started producing it, it was very easy, and we could use a lot of it. Now, the available energy in that barrel has declined so much, it's just not, the value isn't there. So we're going to continue to see volatile prices of oil, but according to the Hills Group, the price is actually going to continue to fall. The only option that it would really increase if we have hyperinflation. If they really print money like crazy. But that means everything goes up in value in relative terms. But sadly, the oil industry and the oil market will collapse on lower oil prices.
Folks, we're talking with Steve St. Angelo from srsroccoreport.com. That's srsroccoreport.com. Visit his website and bookmark the website and check out all the different content that is up there from the articles. Yeah, the newsletter. He's got a number of, on the right-hand side, a number of SoundCloud files that you can listen to, the whole different host of categories and interviews on there. And it's a very interesting and informative website. He'll be with us until through the end of the next segment.
I just want to say this. This last 30 minutes, this last segment has been educational for me. I mean, unbelievable. If you listen to what he said, it's counterintuitive almost to me. But he's correct.
Yeah, and this is something that we don't get into a lot on the show. And he'll be with us again for the next half hour. So when we come back, we're going to pick up right where we left off. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Stay tuned.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Eric said.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Trang Post in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We're offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Armies kit. It contains 12 homeopathic armies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Armies kit at www.changelessandwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes.
Even when the surprise away, you keep on hearing.
That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and the Hagman Report. Our very special guest, Steve Santangelo, srsroccoreport.com. I'm not lying when I say this. We were, again, gathered together before the show, and as we looked over srsroccoreport.com, we all kind of looked at one another and said, Steve Santangelo, so in, spot on in it. I mean, how does he know so much? And you know, a lot of times we talk about our guests and we say that they're, and we, all of our guests are fantastic, but Mr. Santangelo, while other money guys are out there talking about, oh, you know, almost the obvious, or making these predictions, financial predictions that, nah, you know, how many have you seen not come true? Our guest is pretty doggone accurate, if I may say so myself, looking over his website, having his newsletter, the news briefs that he gives out, it's just tremendous. So this is a guy I listen to. This is a gentleman that we listen to. This is a website we follow, and we recommend you do the same. Again, his website, srsroccoreport.com. Before we get back to Steve, I want to mention that one important item as we get into whatever is coming down the pike, and we know something is. Communications with the loved ones, how important is that to you? If you guys travel, perhaps you guys are traveling for work, wives, family at home, wife, family at home. Sorry about that. One wife, family, kids at home. Maybe you're in different spots. What happens if the cell system goes down? Well, think about what happened after 9/11 or whatever. What are you going to do? How are you going to make sure? How are you going to communicate with your family? We've got the answer for you. Real quick, satellitephonestore.com. My favorite method of communication is the satellite phone, Iridium 9555. Let me tell you something. These satellite phones are dependable, line of sight with a satellite. They are less expensive than you think, and I would not trust my satellite phone service with anyone other than Eric Tallman from satellitephonestore.com, satellitephonestore.com. I would urge you to check this out and contact Eric Tallman at Satellite Phone Store. Give them a call. Look on their website. Just go to satellitephonestore.com. Check out. The plans are amazingly inexpensive, and they're all-encompassing. But folks, the mental assurance that we have with satellite phones, it makes all the difference in the world. That's satellitephonestore.com. Steve, thanks for hanging with us. We really appreciate it. Can I ask you, can we get into the precious metals at this point, or should we still remain with the energy oil things at the moment?
No, I'd like to move into the precious metals. One last thing, because, you see, it's always the numbers. I always look at the numbers. The numbers really give you an accurate reading of what's going on. And one of the accurate readings for the oil industry, let's say the U.S. oil, shale oil and gas industry, is its free cash flow. Whatever their operating income is, and then they take you deduct what they spent in capital. And their capital is their drilling, going out there and drilling all these thousands and thousands of wells. Well, I'm looking at the top 15 U.S. oil and gas shale companies, and I look at their free cash flow. Well, guess what? When the shale industry took off in 2008, that was the last year they made money. 2009, all the way to last year, they have been in the red for the last 8 years. no money. See, and so the only way that worked was zero interest rates and money printing. That's the only way that situation worked, and that's not sustainable. So I wanted to give your listeners a little idea that, yes, we brought on all this is oil, which people thought we were going to become energy independent. That was a pipe dream. When you realize and you understand the data and the figures, it was a mirage. We did get a good boost. Unfortunately, it won't last. It'll be like a big blip up and a big blip down. It won't last long. And it just goes to show you they're not making any money doing this. But the important thing is, the reason why this energy thing is important to understand, and we're going to get into the markets and precious metals. If we look at the Dow Jones Index and the debt, the Dow Jones Index and our U.S. debt, it has increased 23 times since 1983, both of them. In 1980, our debt was $863 billion. The debt now is $20 trillion. It's 23 times higher. The Dow Jones average was 865 at the beginning of 1980. It's now 20,000 plus. Well, what is that? That's 23 times higher. The S&P is up 21, and the U.S. retirement is up 24 times. There's no coincidence that our indexes, our retirement market, is up at the same level as our debt. So what does that mean? That means the entire market has been propped up by debt, not by energy, by debt. And so the only way you can continue doing that is if you have abundant and cheap oil production. Well, what happens when oil production really starts to finally decline and things get really ugly? Well, stocks, bonds, and real estate do a nosedive. And that's my forecast. I can't give you a date of that forecast, but those three, which are 99% of investors who are invested in the market, are in stocks, bonds, and real estate. And as you all know, 1% is in precious metals. We see it actually should be the other way around. And why is that? Because the precious metals, if you own a silver or gold coin, it's actually economic energy, that all that was burned, and now it's in that coin or bar. It's stored in there, kind of like a squirrel storing acorns. So you have this economic energy, this value. That's why it's money. That's why gold and silver have been money for 2,000 plus years. It's stored economic energy. Back in the day, it was animal and human labor. Now it's oil, natural gas, coal, nuclear, hydro, and renewables. But the problem is 99% of investors are invested in the wrong assets. And unfortunately, they don't know it because they don't know the energy. And so in time, I see when the markets really start to crack. And I think once they crack, unless we have hyperinflation, Doug and Joe, when they crack, we're going to see the mother of all crashes. And it's going to make 2008 look like a walk in the park. And so at that point in time, this is when the precious metals will really be the safe haven. And they've been manipulated, but you see, once this market cracks, that's where I see this huge surge of interest, price, and demand.
It's interesting to hear you say that. Just to go back to something you said earlier about, for example, the silver coin being, if you can imagine this, folks, I mean, it being a storehouse of, how did you put it, a store of energy, a store, you said it very eloquently.
Yeah, it's a store of economic energy, and there was a lot of capital and energy, whether it's human energy driving the haul trucks, whether it's the capital to build a plant, all that, it took a lot of capital to produce an energy to produce that silver coin or the gold coin. And what's interesting, the reason why there's a 71 ratio right now between the price of gold and the price of silver, the algorithms are basing that on the cost of production. It costs about $15 to $18 to produce an ounce of primary silver, and it costs about $1,100 to produce an ounce of gold. So you divide those two, and you get their 70-to-1 ratio, you know, plus or minus. The problem is gold and silver are not, their store value is not based upon their cost of production, because, you see, a lot of it is not consumed. It's saved. oil, gas, coal, copper, wheat. We eat those. We consume those. We burn
consumed.
Those.
Yeah.
So the problem is, the deal is that the silver coin, when you have purchased that coin, let's say you bought it for $20 or $18, somebody else now owes you labor, or they have to give you a good that equals the value of that coin. However, a stock or a bond or real estate, it's actually, most of it is owned in debt. Its value comes from the burning of energy in the future, because most people have a 30-year mortgage. So we better be burning energy for 30 years to pay that home off, or the stock price is based upon future earnings. Well, you better have the energy in the future to keep that stock price up. The difference is they are energy IOUs, stocks, bonds, and real estate. Energy IOUs. Gold and silver are stored economic energy, and unfortunately, investors don't get that. Some do. Innately, they may not understand the details as I explain them, but they understand it's a good store value. And this is the issue why I look at the precious metals, even though it's kind of going back in time. I think the precious metals have never lost this store of value. What happened ever since 1971, Doug and Joe, the assets have been funneled away from gold and silver into stocks, bonds, and real estate. And away, and that's the reason why their values are so much higher and gold and silver are so much lower. But that will be reversed when the market cracks.
Gotcha. I just want to say I love the way he explained that. Go ahead, Joe.
We haven't really talked about this much on our show. Any thoughts on Bitcoin? You know, this was something that really hasn't been reported in the economy, but it saw some kind of a drop recently. But it was almost at the same level as gold was. We know it's not a hard asset. It's a digital currency. It's at $1,028 for one Bitcoin right now. Any thoughts on Bitcoin?
You know, it's interesting. When they first started producing bitcoins electronically, it took a lot of energy, from what I understand. Gosh, the amount of data, the amount of let's say computer power that it took to produce a bitcoin, and now as there's less and less of them, it takes more and more. The thing about bitcoin, it's an electronic currency. Its amount of bitcoins are, even though they're rising, but they're not rising as much, they're locked in. You see, the difference between Bitcoin and gold and silver, a lot of gold and silver, most of gold and silver, is traded on the exchanges. So when more people want to come in, more traders want to come in to gold and silver, the open interest increases. So we can increase the amount of contracts. They can just go up and up and up and up. So it caps the gold price or silver price. If these people took a fraction of that money and try to get into physical gold and silver, it's not there. It is there, but the price would skyrocket. Now, Bitcoin, so the one thing that Bitcoin does, yes, it does protect, it is kind of a store of value, but it's an electronic store of value. I'm not against Bitcoin, only on the footnote is you have to have electronics and you have to have the system running to allow Bitcoin to function.
It's whereas a cyber cryptocurrency. Yeah.
Yes. If things fall apart, you know, you see, the thing about technology, you get a shovel, a good shovel you use in your garden, you throw it out a window, two-story window, it hits the ground, it's fine. You throw out a computer, you got to go buy a new one. Technology is very fragile. So technology, the more advanced it gets, the more fragile it is. And so the servers that run the whole computer system in the United States need to be constantly updated every several years. And because of the heat, because of just updating the system to be faster. And so Bitcoin functions if that system continues to work. And I'm not saying it won't.
Got it.
But if the system falls apart, I'd rather have real physical gold and silver than a Bitcoin. But I'm not against people owning Bitcoin, but I would probably not, I for myself would not it would not be prudent to have a lot of my funds in Bitcoin.
Yeah, I completely understand and agree. All right. Well, you know, I would trust, and I'm saying this honestly after researching and reading a lot of what you've written and what you've researched. So I would trust you over many other people in your industry, the economy, the economic commentators and such, because you look at everything through the EROI, the energy return on invested. Yeah, that's a fair statement, right? I mean, that's kind of your compass, if you will.
Yes, because there's two ways they call it being accurate or being precise or being accurate and precise. It's like on a bullseye. There's a lot of analysts out there that are very precise. They can get their arrows very close together, but they're way outside the bullseye. I try to look at the analysis that is not only precise, but it's also accurate. They're tightly together in the bullseye. And unfortunately, a lot of analysts, they're very specialized. The left hand does not know what the right hand is doing. And the energy, once you understand the energy, you understand how everything is working together. Even though, unfortunately, a lot of people, they like to look at conspiracy theories. Yes, conspiracy theories do take place. I believe that. But not everything is a conspiracy. There's this notion that, by some analysts, there's 2 million, there's 2 million tons of gold in the world. Well, that can't be. The world's only mined about 200,000 tons. I've looked at the data. It's just physically impossible. And if you look at how gold production has happened, you know, over the last 2,000 years, gold production has gone exponential with oil. Population has gone exponential. Silver production has gone exponential. Copper production has gone exponential, all due to oil. So when you remove oil, then the whole thing falls apart. So if you look at the data on how much gold we produced, you know, since, let's say, 2,000 years ago, it's about 180,000 tons. But there's analysts out there saying there's all this gold out there. So it's looking at the data, going in and trying logically looking at it. We start discerning between good conspiracies that actually have good merit and bad ones. And so that's what I try to do. I try to look at the things in more accurate. And that's actually a reason why, Doug and Joe, I really favor the precious metals. Because I used to be upset when the price would go up and down, but it doesn't bother me anymore. Because if you're going to invest in things, like people have a retirement account, they put their money away every month, every year. They look at it 20, 30 years, or they pay off a house in 20, 30 years. Well, gold and silver should be done the same way. We shouldn't be concerned about these up and downs. But I would say within 5 years, it could be less, we could see serious fireworks, and it's all due to the energy.
And that makes a lot of sense to me when you apply the behavior. And forgive my terminology, even if, or despite the manipulation, when you apply the energy factor there, I can understand this. I mean, it makes sense to me. So, okay. Here we are today, 2017. We see some artificially low prices of silver and gold. To me, by the way, if it was a good buy at 30, it's an even better buy today at 1750 or whatever it might be in terms of silver, and same with gold. Now, I guess my question would be, and maybe this is something I know you've touched on this in your writings, but in a system collapse, I guess we'll take the worst case scenario first. In a system collapse, those holding physical gold and silver, what role would that physical gold and silver play in a full-blown, holy cow, the bottom fell out, Venezuelan on steroids kind of collapse? And pardon me if that question sounded really stupid, but or kind of convoluted.
No, it's a good question. And from a precious metal dealer that I deal with, one of his clients has a brother who's a minister, and he was in Venezuela. He just came back from Venezuela, I think it was last year. 1 ounce of silver will get you in the country. I'm not talking in the city. 1 ounce of silver would get you 6 months worth of food off the farmer's land. You see, and 1 ounce of gold, from what I understand, would buy a modest home in the country. I'm not talking in the city. So the issue is this, too. People don't understand what's going to happen when the energy system really starts to disintegrate. The value of gold and silver will rise because there's not much of it there. There's not really much of it there. It'll go from what I call its commodity price mechanism, which is its cost of production and some supply and demand. And it will transition to its store of value because there's so little bit of it out there that when investors try to get the gold and silver, that's what pushed their value up. And having a typical home in a suburb, you have to live somewhere, but that value is going to implode, as well as a commercial building, as well as stocks and bonds. So the issue is this. I can see in the future, and then all the vehicles, as you know, the vehicle industry is topping. There's so many people being put in these cars that are leased now, and these lease payments really aren't paying for the vehicle. Well, I see a time where there's just these vehicles everywhere. Pretty new vehicles, 2-3 years old, with no buyers. People can't afford them because they can't make their payments. I see precious metal investors who have precious metals being able to buy things. I mean, it's just amazing what they'll be able to buy. And the thing is, they're going to have to think of it this way too. You wouldn't want to purchase $400,000 or $500,000 home, even though you could afford it with very little gold or silver, because the values of the house has collapsed, but the metals have increased, because you still have to heat and cool the darn thing. And so you have to start thinking of different ways, and probably you all discuss this on your survival, you know, places away from the big city and the country. I see homes that are maybe on a couple of acres. They have a little garden, orchard. Those are going to be the go-to places. You know, you don't want to buy a big SUV, even though you could afford it with your gold and silver. You could, you know, you would want to buy a much higher mileage vehicle. So it's hard to kind of see how this unfolds, but I do believe people owning precious metals will find these will be the folks that have the capital. And even though the system could fall apart in many different ways, it could be a Mad Max, it could be a slow and then fast collapse, but I do believe there will still be economic activity, there will still be technology, a lot less of it, but those holding the precious metals will be able to afford more options, better
options.
And
that's what it's all about, options.
That's what it's all about. Better
yes,
options than stocks, bonds, and real estate.
Man, I'll tell you what, in the course of this, your appearance, you really smoothed out a lot of rough edges we had with respect to the economy and really put things in perspective. I just... your insight is so valuable. And folks, that's why his newsletter, his website, when I say his, obviously Steve St. Angelo, SRS Rocco Report, top notch information. All of this makes a lot of sense. Joe, we're getting close to the top of the hour here, to the point where I have to cut you loose. So Joe and I, we had a list of questions to ask you. I think we only got through like a third of them, but I'm going to kick it over to you, Joe, because I know you want to get
in. Yeah, with just 2.5 minutes left, Steve, I got a question on the war on cash. Are we looking at the incremental approach toward a cashless society, or is that just something that these globalists hope for in the near future?
Yes, you know, the globalists, I'll answer it in two ways. The energy return, the falling energy return on investment will gut the globalist the most, which is why I am less and less concerned about Big Brother and the surveillance cameras and the NSA, because that takes a lot of energy. Cheap energy made the United States, made the federal government function. But falling energy return on investment will totally gut it. It will gut big governments. It will gut Walmarts, because Walmarts make a little bit of money, fractions of money on lots of sales. That whole economic model is destroyed by this falling energy return on investment. So that's how I look at it. This cashless society, we have to understand, not everybody's going towards that. Japan, they pay a lot of it. They believe in cash over there. They buy their cars in cash. They like cash. So it's not happening everywhere. But to go away from cashless, you need a high-functioning, highly technological system that is not only powered by coal and natural gas production is going to decline too, as well as the oil to run all this. I don't see a cashless society working. I don't see it. I see them continuing to implement that, but I think it's going to hit a brick wall because of this falling energy return on investment. I mean, look at the Roman Empire. There was 1 million people in Rome at one time. It fell down to like 12,000 people. So now, it wasn't in the best interest of the elite of Rome to see that happen, now was it? Because they made money on their real estate, they made money on selling the bread and the goods, whatever. So it wasn't in the best interest of the elite to lose that money, lose that wealth. But so that's why I'm not worried about the elite. And even though we're going to continue to see this push for cashless society, Doug and Joe, over the next 5-10 years, even if they advance it, I think it's going to hit a brick wall.
Man,
and if we pay attention to the energy is the key for people to look at to see how things unfold.
Steve St. Angelo, thank you so much for your gracious gift of time.
SRSRoccoReport.com.
Wow. Would you come back? I mean, would you ever? We'd love to have you back sometime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the questions that I didn't answer, we can. If any of your listeners have any questions, and we can keep an update of what's happening. I mean, I can update what's happening in the energy industry and what's going on. And I think it would be great to keep your listeners updated, because looking at this information, we can get a better idea of when it's going to really start to fall apart.
Absolutely. Invaluable service to our listeners and viewers. God bless you, my friend. Thank you so very much. Again, we'll be in touch. Steve St. Angelo, SRSRoccoReport.com. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report. HagmanReport.com. Give me back. Give us 2 minutes. We'll be right back.
Terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest-yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high-net-worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate a maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.